Hello, everybody. Good to be here with you, Galveston Island. Last weekend we had 300,000 motorcycles. Oh, my gosh. That's enough to wake the dead. Michael, it was so great listening to you. Boy, what a pleasure you are. Jeez. A lot of what he had to say about guarding against scams and cranks and wackos wearing a lot of tie-dye who say that they are psychics. Yes, be on guard. He gave you guys some really, really good tips. So thank you so much, Michael. My name is Carla Wills Brandon, and this is A Walk to the Other Side. And basically what we talk about... Oh, listen, I'm getting back up. That's scary. Let me turn that off. what we talk about on this show is... I wonder if I need to turn that off. That's really interfering, isn't it? What we talk about here is we talk about... Michael is one of these guys who is able to get in touch with the other side. And the rest of us look at him and we go, well, what about us? He gave you some really, really good tips, but this is the show where we get more into those tips. So many of us forget to listen. We forget to look. We don't write our dreams down. We don't take the time to look for what are called after-death communications. And so we're going to talk a little bit about that tonight. Well, we got the motorcycles out of here, so I'm real relieved. But I got to share something with you that was really a whole lot of fun. I told you a couple of weeks ago that on this island, this island is really populated with a lot of really old houses. And so people around here are very open to spirit activity. It's kind of a no-brainer. Nobody gives it a second thought. People have pictures of their ghosts on the wall, and people talk about making contact with those on the other side, and it's a table conversation, not a big deal. People have orbs floating around their houses. Across the causeway, I have a friend who does a lot of recording of spirit activity in houses, and so he has promised me, if he's listening, he has promised me to take me on some of his hunts. We'll go out together and we'll see what kind of activity is going on. And I really do believe that there are several types of activity. The first type of activity, it's sort of like a recording. It's kind of like, you know, you stick a video in your video player or a CD in your CD player, and you can watch whatever is on there over and over and over again. Images have been imprinted on the videotape, or they have been imprinted on that CD. And when there are acts of violence or when there is tragedy in a certain location, it's almost as if the environment absorbs that tragedy. And so oftentimes people will talk about seeing a spirit doing some sort of activity over and over again. The woman walking down the street, well, she's always walking down the street. Here we have Ashton Villa, old, beautiful old mansion on the island, and the woman in white is always staring out of a picture window. And is that conscious spirit activity, a consciousness that's trying to make contact with those of us on the other side? Well, I don't know. Or is that an imprint on the environment? The woman in white, she was very responsible for rescuing lots of folks who were stuck during the 1900 storm, the big hurricane that killed about 9,000 people here. We also have after-death communications around these old houses, which are very, very subtle. We're not talking full-blown apparitions or, as Michael was talking about, electrical things going kind of cuckoo, like radios or fans or things of that nature. I told you a couple of weeks ago about my neighbor, Mr. Harris, who came back and he kept setting off his alarm system over and over and over again. Sometimes it can be as subtle as a smell. And while all those motorcycles were racing up and down my street, a very small car pulled up in front of our house, and this older gentleman got out of the house, and he was with a couple of other elderly people, and they knocked on our door, and they asked if they could come in. Well, you know, when we have Mardi Gras around here, people are always wandering into our houses, wanting gumbo or wanting this or wanting that. It's Southern hospitality, gang. So we invited he in, and he was with his daughter, who was 64 years old. And what they shared was that they had grown up in this house. This man was 93 years old, and his wife had been raised in this house. And the daughter, the 64-year-old daughter, had also spent a lot of time in this house. So it was a lot of fun getting the history about who slept where and what bedroom and what everybody did. And it was fun sharing stories. And as they got up to leave, I asked, were there ever any tales about a perfume that your wife's mother wore? This is a 93-year-old man, his mother-in-law. And I asked this question for a very, very specific reason. When I moved into this house, I would get socked by a very strong rose smell. And I'd go traipsing around the house looking to see where the roses were coming from. There were no rose gardens outside in the garden. I don't wear rose perfume. But I would just get this very strong rose smell. And this had always, I'd always had questions about this, but I'd never had anybody to ask a question to. And so the 93-year-old man said, well, he didn't know what kind of perfume his mother-in-law wore. And then the 64-year-old granddaughter said, but Dad, she had dishes of dried rose petals all over this upper part of the house, right where I smelled the roses. That's an after-death communication. And so often, we just blow that stuff off. So my take on that is that this woman, who was the original owner of this house, as soon as me and my troop moved in, she was checking us out. She wanted to see what we were doing. She wanted to know what we were doing with her house. And so for about a year, periodically, I would smell this wonderful rose scent. And I haven't smelled it in a long, long time. If you have a question or you'd like to talk a little bit about maybe some of your experiences, some of your after-death communications, call toll-free at 1-888-268-4313. And international calls, dial 281-419-7697 or email me at drsbrandon, D-R-S-B-R-A-N-D-O-N, at sbcglobal.net. I have collected close to 2,000 of these accounts. And what's so interesting is that people always say to me at the beginning of their email or at the beginning of their letter, you're going to think I'm crazy, but. And then they'll share with me an after-death communication or a deathbed vision. A deathbed vision, very quickly, is the experience of being at the side of someone who's getting ready to part. And sometimes people will see the spirit leaving the body. It can be gray, misty-colored. It can be pastel in color. Sometimes they'll see apparitions of deceased relatives who have come to take the one who's getting ready to die away. And I think, you know, for years and years and years, people used to refer to these experiences as ghosts or hauntings. But this is an incredibly common experience. Even historically, there are these encounters. I like to collect the historical accounts, and on the show, we're going to really talk about that. Interestingly, my aunt, the Holocaust survivor, I shared with you a little bit about her a couple of weeks ago. She received an incredible honor. Incredible honor. She was honored by the Houston Holocaust Museum a week ago Wednesday. And interestingly, I came across this curious news item. Oftentimes people will ask me, well, are people who are really, really evil, do they have these sorts of experiences? These sorts of experiences, they cross all ethnic groups, they cross all religions, they cross all genders. People from all walks of life can can have these experiences. But I thought this was kind of interesting, and this is from Body, Mind, and Spirit, and it talks about the Hess haunting. Now, Rudolf Hess was just, he was a horrible, horrible Nazi. And earlier this year, this is dated a couple of years ago, one-time deputy Adolf Hitler died after spending decades as the sole inmate in a prison. A lot of these guys, you know, after World War II, they rounded them up and they tried them, Nuremberg trials. I noticed that listening to Michael, there were a lot of younger call-in folk. And sometimes it's interesting to take a look at history because in that way we don't have to repeat it. But anyway, this guy, this really bad news Nazi, he was held in this prison for quite a while. Eventually this property was put up for sale for about $650,000. And according to an article in Psychic News, now Psychic News, gang, they're out of London, and all you have to do is punch Psychic News into your search engine. Go check them out. They have some very, very interesting, they have all sorts of wonderful discussions about the world of spirit. They have information on schools that teach one to become more in touch with the spirit world. They give accounts. They've been around forever. But anyway, numerous reports of figures moving up and down the staircase, lights going on in locked rooms. Remember Michael talked about how spirit can come in and play with electricity. And photographs moving explicitly. We have had in this house, when there has been activity in this house, we have had pictures fall off the wall. My father-in-law, when he passed, dang him, he would knock a couple of pictures off the wall and he would turn up the radio. It drove me nuts. 2 a.m, there he is turning up that radio. Anyway, Hess attempted to commit suicide by hurling himself over the balcony into the hall below. So there's all of this activity going on now in this prison, and a lot of the guards who are working there have seen visions. Apparently, people aren't real spooked by these visions. Now, it also says that when Hess was there, there were other visitations, and he wasn't spooked either. And so that brings me to a question. Once again, I think that there are individuals out there who shut themselves off. They shut themselves off from experiencing their spirituality, and they do that with, you know, maybe they like to drink a little too much, they like to smoke a little too much dope, or they like to play around with a few of the other substances out there. And ritual in ancient culture, certain types of herbs were used to induce contact with spirit. And that's a whole different ball game. But I think that sometimes you have folks who they get involved a little bit too much with chemicals, or you know, they shut themselves off in other ways. They have so much baggage. They have done so many heinous things to their other to other humans, or they have not been honest, or they haven't taken care of business. And I think that those are all ways that we can shut ourselves off from experiencing spirit. Because, you know, basically, the spirit world is just, it's just a veil. That's all it is. It's a change of address, as so many near-death experience authors write about. They're right there. They're right there on the other side. How many times have I been in my kitchen and I've been really ticked off about something, and suddenly I'll find myself eating Russian foods that I grew up with, and I'll be talking to my grandmother, and I'll just be angry, and I'll know that she's listening to me. So I think that there are people out there, yes, who have done some really, really rotten things, and I think that they, too, can encounter experiences like this, but I just don't think that they're clear enough to really understand what they're all about. So here you have this murderer who committed mass murder, massacred millions of Jews, and he is visited, and he considered them to be instances of psychological warfare perpetrated by British intelligence. That's how out of touch he was. Something like 60% of the public actually believes in life after death. But interestingly, we are still really, really scared of these visitations. How many of you out there right now who are listening are frightened? Who maybe you consciously shut this stuff down because you're scared? I've had lots of folks say to me, you know, I don't think I want to be visited by Aunt Bessie. Or I don't think I want to be tapped on the shoulder by my father. Or I've even gotten some emails from individuals who have had some abuse in their history, sexual abuse, physical abuse, and they have said to me, I really don't want to make a connection with these individuals. What's so interesting is that so far, from what I have gathered, if somebody does have a history of abuse and that individual does pass on, connection does not happen until the person who is healing from that abuse is ready for it. I haven't seen an instant yet of contact being made where somebody is scared to death by maybe the person who raped them, who passed on, or maybe a relative who molested them, or a parent who was abusive to them. I just haven't seen that happen. Or a husband who, or wife who was inappropriate, or a lover who was inappropriate. But interestingly, you know, what we do, as opposed to exploring our own spirituality and understanding that just a walk to the other side, it doesn't have to be a scary experience, what we do is we visit Hollywood. It's a way of sort of edging ourselves in. We're kind of, it's interesting, over the last couple of years, I've noticed that a lot of shows on television, there's Medium and Ghost Whisperer, and you have all of these different movies that have come out that have to do with life after death. I get kind of disappointed because they sort of put a spin on it and they end up being really, really scary. And I don't think that stuff is scary. My son will often say to me, well, let's go see this movie. This is something you're interested in, Mom. This is about life after death. Let's go see this movie. And maybe I'll have seen a trailer and I'll think to myself, absolutely not. I'm not going to go see that. It's not like that. Years ago, I did make contact. I made visual contact with all of my deceased relatives, and they were in spirit form. And it was an overwhelming emotional encounter. They were in orb form. They were wisps of energy. They touched me. The temperature in the room where I made contact with them dropped. But I wasn't frightened. And when they touched me, it was the most loving experience I had ever encountered in my life. For a long, long time, I couldn't even talk about it because it was so emotional. So I have a real hard time when some of these films come out or some of these television programs come out and they show the those on the other side, they look mangled, or they look like they just dug themselves out of the grave. Or I just don't think it's like that. I think that those on the other side look for ways to contact us. And what's been interesting is that with email and with computers and digital cameras and cell phones, there are actually now reports of contact via these means of communication. I mean, Michael was talking about how the deceased will, you know, they'll like ring you up on the phone. I had an agent years ago who talked about getting phone calls from the deceased. And I also had the woman who edited my first six books. She's a British woman, and she's one of these characters who really does open herself up to spirit on the other side. And when her mother passed away, she got a phone call from her mother. So this really curious report came out. It was in the Science Reporter, of all things, that came out on Halloween, of all days. I think that a lot of times, you know, hardcore media, a lot of times they feel safe at Halloween. It's like it's okay to talk about some of this unusual spirit activity. Otherwise, they have a tendency to sort of discount it. But anyway, I thought that this was really curious. This man's wife had died, but he kept her email account open. There might be something interesting to do. Do you know that when friends of mine pass away, I actually do keep their email accounts open, just in case? So far, I haven't been contacted that way. Usually, if I'm contacted, I'm contacted auditorially, where all of a sudden I'll hear somebody in my ear and they want to talk, and a lot of times they're very surprised that they've gotten to the other side, and they're overwhelmed because they thought that physical death was the end, and here they are, and everything is, they're still, they got a consciousness and they've got a personality, and they're just very excited. So I haven't received any messages from the beyond in my email account, but I keep a couple of them open anyway. But anyway, this man, he checked it regularly to see if she had any messages from far-flung friends or acquaintances who didn't know she had passed away. So he, in essence, kept it open not to get messages from her, but he was keeping it open in case some of her friends' emails that he could pass on the news that she had passed. On the anniversary of their first date, a strange email arrived with an attachment that had nothing in it. He checked to see who it was from, but no names in it on the from header area. On their wedding anniversary, an identical message arrived, and he became convinced, he explained, on a website devoted to the paranormal, that it was his dead wife trying to communicate with him. You know, the thing that's really interesting, when we are contacted from the other side, there is this sense, if we're real in touch with it, there is a knowing deep within our soul that that's what that was, that this is somebody. So when this man came to my house with his granddaughter, and I was asking about the roses, and the granddaughter said to me that her grandmother had put roses around the house, I knew intuitively that this was this woman's way of checking up on me and my family to see who we were and what we were doing in her house. When my grandmother has come to me in dreams, the dreams have been incredibly different in comparison to regular run-of-the-mill dreams. So, email and cell phone calls from the dead, ghostly orbs that appear in pictures taken by digital cameras, that's something else that any of you out there can do. It's not that hard to do. You can go down to your local drugstore and just get a disposable camera and go someplace where maybe you have heard legends about some spirit activity, or maybe you've lost somebody that you really love and you really care about. You can go to their house and you can take some photographs. Even if you have a piece of their jewelry, or if you have something that they owned that's very special to you. I had some stones that belonged to my grandmother. And what I did is I was taking pictures of, I had them put into a ring. And what I did is I took some pictures of the ring, and on those pictures were what are called vortexes, streams of white light all around the ring. It was very, very interesting, and my intuition told me that my grandmother was very happy with the ring, and she was happy with what I had done with the stones. Any technology throughout history has been adapted to two things. First of all, we got pornography, gang. And secondly, the paranormal. James Alcock, a professor at York University who specializes in psychology of belief, said, and he is a founding member of the Committee for the Scientific Investigation of Claims of the Paranormal, a group that has investigated and exposed psychics, spoonbenders, and other folks since the mid-1970s. Even he says that, and this is a guy who seems a little skeptical, even he says that each time there is a new form of technology, somehow the paranormal finds its way into it. Somehow the technology begins to be used. But from cyberspace expense to the great beyond, and the web is a worldwide Ouija board. Well, I don't know if I'd go that far. There are thousands of websites devoted to the paranormal. People report their supernatural experiences. Many are encounters with old-fashioned style ghosts and apparitions, the kind that inspired the most spectacle Halloween costumes you'll see on dark streets. But a growing number involve modern technology like cell phones. A young man gets a call from his grandparent warning him that he left the oven on. Now, if you think that that is kind of a goofy statement, what's interesting about our loved ones on the other side is that I really do believe that they're not going to interfere with our lives, that we do have lessons here we need to learn. Years, not that long ago, I've written 10 books, and I decided I was going to try a new agent, and this agent and I sat down, and she's a delightful woman. She really is wonderful, but the thing about the publishing business is that it's real dog-eat-dog, and so unfortunately nowadays most people, you know, the publishers, they want a gimmick, and so we were sitting there, and we were talking about my next project, which actually is messages for others, mothers coming to their children after they have passed on and sharing with them. And if anybody out there has lost a mother and you have made contact with your mother or you have an experience to share with regard to what happened from a paranormal perspective before she passed or after the fact or if you've had an interesting dream, please, please email me at drsbrandon. DRSBRANDON at sbcglobal.net, because I'd really like to hear from you. But anyway, we were talking about projects, and she started asking me. She said, well, when people are contacted from the other side, do they, like, get lottery numbers, and do they get, what kind of information do they get? And I think that sometimes our loved ones on the other side are going to give us some information, but for the most part, I think that a lot of time what they're going to do is they're going to let us learn our own lessons. And a lot of people, they don't like that. They don't like that. So anyway, there are people who are receiving messages now on cell phones, and to be honest with you, from my point of view, that's nothing new. When my own mother passed away, I got an unusual phone call. And I knew intuitively that it was my mother calling me. There are also reports of mysterious emails, like the one posted on a paranormal website by the man who identified himself as Tom, who believed his wife had attempted to contact him on two important anniversaries in their relationship. He's in good company. Even though Thomas Edison saw new technology as a possible channel of communication with the spirit world, get that, gang, Thomas Edison, most people don't know that. Thomas Edison was very involved at the turn of the last century and a few decades into the century. He was very involved with spirit activity. And he really did see this communication technology with regard to communication as an avenue into making contact with deceased loved ones. The inventor tried to make contact through a phonograph-like device in the 1890s, and then tried again in the 1920s with chemical equipment. Most people don't know that. There were a lot of folks that we learn about in college, in psychology. Jung was very big with regard to the spirit world. Freud dabbled around in it for a while. Most people don't know that. The advent of photography was closely followed by mysterious pictures of ghosts, and today digital cameras have sparked a similar boom in spooky pictures. Why do they always use the word spooky? That makes me so upset. Including many containing strange transparent orbs. Daryl Wash, executive director of the Halifax-based Centre for Parapsychological Studies in Canada, said they are caused by the flash being too close to the lens in the point-and-shoot cameras. Let me tell you something, people. I have gotten some really unusual things on photograph. I went to a house years ago in Jamaica, Rose Hall. And Rose Hall, it's one of those, it's a spook story. I'm going to use the word. The woman who lived there, she was not a very nice person. She murdered all of her husbands, and she wasn't very nice to the people who worked on her plantation. And so her house is just, I don't know if it's imprinting on her house, the things that I picked up there. I've gone there a couple of times and gotten some very, very, very interesting photographs with orbs and vortexes and strange reflections and mirrors when nobody's standing in front of them. But, you know, the skeptics will say that you're standing too close to the lens, or it was raindrops, or it was this, or it was that. But seriously, gang, go out there with a throwaway camera and take some pictures and see what you come up with. I just got through. We have a house way up in the mountains in outside of Asheville. And we bought the house from, it belonged to a couple who lived into their late 90s. And when I first started restoring that house, I could feel that there were visitors, and there was a lot of unfinished business. It didn't feel real good. And last summer we went out to the cemetery and we took some pictures. I haven't developed the film yet. I'll be real curious to see what's on it. But once the telephone did become popular, people reported calls from dead loved ones. But people are funny about it, too. They're not going to come right out and they're not going to tell you, oh, I got a call from Aunt Bessie. Usually people are cautious about sharing this sort of information. And the interesting thing, the thing that I find the most fascinating, is that a lot of the accounts that I have received have not come from people who have picked up a New Age book. They haven't gone to a metaphysical school. They haven't visited a medium. These are everyday people who have had these experiences. And what they do is they end up in my office. A lot of times they're in grief. They've lost somebody. And as we begin to do some grief work, some clinical grief work, they'll look at me and they'll kind of smile and they'll say, you know, I got to share something with you. I can't believe this. You're going to really think I'm nuts. But here goes. I turned on the television and I saw my father's face in the screen. Or I heard voices on the telephone that I know were related to those that I love or on the other side. So if you've had an experience of this nature, I really do want to hear from you. You can go to www.carlawills.net and look for contact information, or you can email me directly at drsbrandon@sbcglobal.net. In the title of your email, put A Walk to the Other Side, and I look forward to hearing from you. We did just celebrate Halloween, and as I said, Halloween is the safe time to go ahead and just open up, and all the radio shows and all the television shows, they all have a paranormal bent to them. It's like it's okay. It's that one time of the year when the veil between this life and the next is believed to be lifted anyway. And that's what a lot of the old folk tales are about. Now, after Halloween, we have something called Old Souls Day. And I want to talk to you a little bit about this. You know, I think that the baby boomer generation, grief, we have got to be one of the most death-phobic, age-phobic, and I'm a baby boomer, I'm 49, very death-phobic, age-phobic crowd. And our children have been raised with computers and computer games and internet. And, you know, internet, if you look at it, the internet consists of alternative realities, different levels of reality. Well, I think that's what happens to us when we move from this reality to a next reality. We're just moving to another reality. But I think that for the last 100 years, boy, let me tell you, we have just really ignored, just totally ignored the whole issue of death, physical dying, and what happens to us after we pass on. If you ever go to a funeral, you notice that people are always real busy around a funeral. They're very, very busy. They don't really want to sit down and feel the grief, feel the loss, because when somebody does pass on, we can still make contact with them. It's just, you know, it's a little harder. It's not quite so easy. But those that came before us, they celebrated certain dates, which basically acknowledge that there is a cycle of life and there is a cycle of death. So, you know, the Celts on October 31st, you know, they, during that period of time, they dance around bonfires wearing animal heads and hides, and they did that so that they could confuse the spirits. You know, so today what do? We throw on a costume and we go out there, and most of us don't even know why we do it. Around the end of the first millennium, the church reinforced its attempts to cover the Celtic celebration. You know, it's like, unfortunately, the thing that's so interesting about religion is that most religions, and we're going to talk about this in a couple of weeks, most religions are based on paranormal activity. They're based on near-death experiences, after-death communications, and the departing visions of the thing. I mean, if you really dig into a religion, any religious tradition, and you get past all the dogma and you get past all the incense and the ritual and the whole shabam, what you come up with is that somebody had a near-death experience, or somebody came back after they had passed, or somebody was getting ready to pass, and they provided those standing around at the bedside with premonitions of things to come, you know? And those that came before us, they knew this. They all knew this. And we're the ones, our generation and a couple of generations before us, we're the ones who have pushed all this by the wayside. But there are little groups of us here and there who are, you know, we want to learn about this stuff, and we've discovered that maybe we're getting tapped a little bit on the shoulder every once in a while by relatives or friends or loved ones on from our past, or maybe we're even having some premonitions. Do you know how many people had premonitions of the World Trade Center being attacked? One of my friends who actually has written a book on premonitions, and who's the type of individual, this is not a gift I would want in 1,000 years, but he can see crimes before they happen. But he put together lots and lots of accounts of individuals, everyday people from all walks of life who had had premonitions of the 9/11 attacks. But Old Souls Day, which just took place last week, is actually the day after Halloween. And in with many past religions and pagan groups, along with some cultures today, a lot in Latin America, they celebrate Old Souls Day. And that, it is a fun holiday. Certain popular beliefs connected with Old Souls Day, they are of pagan origin, and they are tied to religious death rites. It's a way of acknowledging that just because someone is physically deceased, that doesn't mean that consciously they're not here. The dead are believed by the peasantry of many Catholic countries to return to their former homes on All Souls Night and partake of the food of the living. In the Tyrol, what people do is they leave cakes out for their deceased relatives on tables, and they keep the room warm. In Brittany, people flock to the cemeteries at nightfall, and and they sit around the graves of their loved ones, and they pour holy water on the tombstones, and at bedtime, the supper is left on the table for the souls. For those of you who are in New Mexico, I don't have to explain this holiday to you at all. On Old Souls Day, on Christmas Eve, oh, this is just a wonderful experience. In the Hispanic graveyards, you'll find families at the grave. And what they will do is they will go and they will clean off the grave and they will set food out. Or they'll have a picnic at the grave. And they will leave candles burning into the night. It's just wonderful. In Mexico, this is a special, special, special holiday. I've been in Mexico on the Day of the Dead. That's what they call it down there. And at first glance, the Day of the Dead with its decorations, you know, they got little skeletons performing daily tasks, and they've got all these, they have sugar skulls inscribed with names. You know, and for a lot of us Westerners, we look at that and we see it as superstition. We see it as archaic. But in reality, what it is, it's a memorial or it's a remembrance day. It's a day of connecting. It's a day where families visit their loved ones. You know, graves aren't for the dead, gang. They really aren't. Graves are a way for us to connect. A lot of people do feel like they can really, really connect. I had tons of unfinished business with my mother years ago. Oh, tons. And she and I needed to have a talk. And at that point, I just could not feel her. And so I made a special trip back to California, where I'm originally from. And I went to her grave, and I sat on her grave. And she and I had a chat. And we had basically a screaming match. And I made a decision that I was going to be mad at her for as long as I needed to be mad. And because I know in my heart that she can hear me. And there are times when I'm still mad at her, or I'm still upset with some of my deceased relatives, or maybe I'm just like having a really bad day. But on Day of the Dead or Old Souls Day, it really is a time when people can honor their ancestors and the dead, the deceased with, I mean, they'll like build home altars and they'll put fruit on it. They'll do special treats, maybe bake something special that their deceased loved one really enjoyed. And it's just a way to connect. And believe it or not, that's also a time when people talk about maybe apparitions, or they'll talk about connecting. You know, they're connecting with their loved ones, and sometimes they're, you know, the deceased on the other side, gang. It's not like we go to the other side and all of a sudden we sprout wings and we're at peace with the universe and life is peachy keen and everything is wonderful. I mean, we're going to take us with us to the other side. And maybe we haven't, you know, if we haven't cleaned up some of our mess over here, if we haven't made peace with some of our relationships, if we've got some addictions we need to take care of, if we've been self-destructive, if we've found ourselves getting into one destructive relationship after another, you know, we're going to take all that garbage with us. And I found one apparition, account of an apparition that had to do with Old Souls Day. I just kind of had to chuckle at. And it came from a guy who was talking about a church in his neighborhood, and good Catholic guy. And 40 years ago, this is when his experience happened on Old Souls Day, November 2nd, several people had gone to his church, and they were going to pray for the souls of the departed. That's, you know, and that's something that we can also do. If we are concerned about our loved ones on the other side, we can pray for them. We can pray that they do what it is they need to do to grow. Thy will be done. That's what I say to my concept of a higher power. I don't like to dictate what should be done, so I keep it short and simple, and I just say, Thy will be done. You know, sometimes people, when they go out, they leave a mess behind. And they got to struggle with that, so a few prayers always help. But anyway, while these individuals were praying, they heard the organ begin to play, which started playing. Turning toward the organ, they noticed that, Yep, it was playing by itself. Also, the hands on the clock in the church began to spin out of control. In the opposite direction. I mean, spirit sometimes has to go to all sorts of lengths to get our attention. Then suddenly, six monks appeared, three dressed in white and three dressed in black. And they were standing on either side of the organ. The people in the church became frightened, and that's because, you know, we're so out of touch with this sort of experience that when it does visit us, we get really scared. A lot of us do. Well, anyway, all these folks in the church, they made a beeline for the church doors, but the doors wouldn't open. The monks floated through the pews of the church to the front of the altar, and the organ stopped playing, and the monks said, "Pray for us." After this, the wind blew the doors open. So, you know, every once in a while, spirit will get in touch with us if they maybe need something from us. I've heard of accounts where there has been concern. Maybe there's something that's a dangerous situation. There was a departing vision that was shared with me of a woman who was suddenly awakened. She was awakened in the middle of the night, and she was awakened by her, this would be an after-death communication, by her deceased mother. And her deceased mother basically said to her, "Go into your daughter's room and look under the bed." And so the mother, she got up and she went to her daughter's room and she looked under the bed, and there was an electrical outlet that was fraying and it was sparking. And if she had not gotten up and had not pulled that plug, God only knows, you know, that plug was next to a blanket, and if it sparked and it caught the blanket on fire, and then it would have been devastating. So periodically the dead, you know, they've got something, they want to share something with us too. But the Day of the Dead, it acknowledges the supernatural, and it provides the living with an opportunity to, from a society point of view, from a religious point of view, safely look at death and dying in the afterlife. Now, I'm sure there are some of you out there who are very comfortable with this sort of stuff, but you notice that when you talk to friends, family, loved ones, they just are not that comfortable at all. So anyway, it was a fun holiday. I always like Halloween, and I always like the Day of the Dead. I found something else out digging around here. Do you guys know that the famous vampire author Anne Rice? Now Anne Rice, she started her journey out basically writing novels about ghosts, witches, and vampires. And she wrote some really, really interesting stuff. I mean, she was a best-selling author, but then, I don't know if y'all noticed it, but she sort of disappeared off the planet. Nobody knew what happened to her. Well, now she has written a book that is titled Christ the Lord Out of Egypt, which depicts Jesus as a 7-year-old boy talking about his life. She's done with vampires, she's done with witches, and she's done with ghosts. Now, when I read this, I really did, I had to laugh a little bit. How many of you out there know that Anne Rice lost a child? She lost a child at a very young age. That's when she started her career as an author, dealing with things like vampires and dealing with things like ghosts. Oftentimes people are very, very angry when death happens. And they need a way to kind of ease into the paranormal safely. A lot of times people are very, very angry with any concept of God, or they are very, very angry with any concept of spirituality or religion. And so what they do is they find that maybe the New Age movement is a little bit safer, or the paranormal is a bit safer, because they don't have to confront the fact that they feel as though God has taken something very special from them. So I thought it was really interesting that what Anne Rice did was she did exactly what I see in my practice time and time again. In my travels, Anne Rice's story is just not unique. And interestingly, not long ago, her husband of 41 years, he passed away from a brain tumor. So in between her giving up the books on the paranormal and delving into this book. It's based on the Gospel of Thomas, which is a book the early church rejected. It's very interesting, as a matter of fact. If you haven't read it, go pick it up. She has come full circle, and now she's back involved with her religion. I mean, you know, she was diagnosed with diabetes and underwent gastric bypass surgery, and her way of dealing with the loss of this child and some of the trauma that she had to deal with was she's a gifted writer, and so she got into writing. And her first book, they were twisted, gang. They, you know, her characters were tortured, and they were all looking for the meaning of life, and she questioned God, and spirituality was debated. And in actuality, her series of paranormal books, they were really just a glimpse into her own tortured spiritual journey. So I guess I have to ask you out there, how many of you are walking around, maybe you believe in, you're into metaphysics, you like to meditate, you've done things to make contact with the deceased, but maybe you have some unfinished business with people who have passed on. In our last few minutes, I want to share with you an email I recently got I'm hoping in future shows people will call in and share a little bit. I don't know how many of you are feeling brave yet, but I'd love to hear some of your experiences. But I received this incredible email. Speaking of Anne Rice and the loss of a child, I get a lot of these. I get emails from people who have lost children, and they're just, you know, they're just heart-wrenching. And so I want to share this with you because it's a good example of what a departing vision is all about. And it says, "Dear Carla, I have wanted to write to you since I read your book, One Last Hug Before I Go." That's a book I wrote. It's all about the departing visions of the dying. Hopefully, for those who have read it, it makes you feel like those experiences you have had are not unusual. Anyway, she says, "It made me feel so much better, like I wasn't crazy, after all. The night that my son died, I could not sleep." That's real typical. Oftentimes, we feel agitated, irritated, uncomfortable when someone near us is either getting ready to pass, or they have passed, or if they're in trouble. The dogs were agitated, and in fact, for weeks before, I had felt something intense was going to happen, but I just couldn't put my finger on it. When the coroner and funeral director, both of whom are really good friends of mine, came to the door to tell me, I swear I could hear my son talk over them. Now, a lot of us have had that experience, that after-death communication experience where we have, good grief, it sounds just like the person that we really love is talking right in our ear. And how many of us blow that off? We need to be writing that down, because when we hear that feeling in so strong, that's usually the deceased. They're saying, "Hey, wake up here. I'm trying to get a message to you." Well, anyway, he was saying to his mom, Mom, I'm okay." Then when the coroner started to tell me what happened to my son, my son said, "You do not want to know," loudly. And I conveyed that to the coroner. I told him it was irrelevant, that the facts couldn't change the outcome. The next day, someone had brought to our home one of his shoes, and his twin brother asked me to do something with that shoe because it bothered him. So I took it to my son's room, and again I heard my son, who had died, say, "Does that bother you?" To which I replied, right out loud, "No, not a bit." See, here this woman, she's getting it. Okay, so her deceased son, he's made it to the other side, but he's still going to chat with her, and she's going to chat with him. When I finally was allowed to view his body, I asked to be alone with him, hoping that maybe I would be able to hear him again. Well, I didn't. And I thought, well, I'm his mother, and I'm probably just too grief-stricken at this point. Then all of a sudden, I could feel his presence to my left. See how specific she is? And he said to me, "Don't I look good?" And I kind of laughed and said, "Yeah, you really do look good." And he had actually a slight grin on his face. It was then that I had this dawning came upon me, that basically my son wasn't supposed to be here that long. Now, see, there's that intuition again. The intuition is telling her that her son was supposed to pass when he passed, that he had come into life to get a few things, and he got them, and he was good to go. And that's the word she uses, good to go. He came for honor, integrity, and respect. He had achieved his goal Amazing for a 17-year-old boy. A few moments later, his twin came running up to me and said, Mom, Tyler, that's the boy's name, was good to go. He came for a few things, and he got them, and he was good to go. So see, the twin got the same message from his brother. And oftentimes what happens when people have these experiences, it's not just one person who has the experience. After the funeral, on the procession route, every street was blocked off by the sheriff's deputies in full dress uniform saluting. When we came to the main intersection, there was state troopers all standing at attention, saluting my son. All of a sudden, I felt him pop in. Now, here she says, to my right this time, okay? Last time it was her left. See how specific she is? And he laughed and said, this is expletive. I'm not going to say it. he said a cuss word. He was very pleased with the honor that he was receiving. I didn't hear from him again until the ninth month, till the ninth morning after his passing when I was waking up. And Michael talked about that, how during that period of hypnagogic state, that's that period just before we go to sleep and right when we wake up, oftentimes we can make contact during that time because we basically, we've got one foot in this world and another foot in the other world. I could feel him standing next to my bed, leaning over me and hugging me. I could smell him. There's smell, smell ADC. And before I realized what was happening, I got up and I went right through him. I could feel his presence for months afterwards and still do from time to time. The last contact I had that was really clear was a dream. Here we go, dreams again. He flew into my dream as a dragonfly, and he brought along a butterfly. All of a sudden, they turned into my son and this other kid. The impression I got was that my son was helping this other kid on the other side learn the ropes. So see, we still have things we have to do over there. We don't just go sit on some cloud with a harp and, you know, traipse down some golden path. We continue to learn and grow. He looked at me and he smiled really big and he winked and said, this is how we sneak in to watch TV. The impression I got was that they were in a hurry and had to go. He opened the door in front of him and was gone. He looked radiant. After pondering the dream for a few days, it occurred to me that I saw the back of his head in the dream and it was perfect. The back of his head had been crushed when he died, but it was perfect dream. That's one more thing I want to share with you, is that oftentimes when people see the deceased in a dream or if they manifest in an apparition, they don't look sick if they were sick. They don't look, if they were in a horrible accident that was deforming in nature, they don't look deformed. That's why Hollywood, they just tick me off. They always show these people looking so deformed and decrepit. It doesn't work that way. I still laugh about the dream. This is how we sneak in to watch TV. Whatever, it definitely lifted my spirit. In fact, my emotional state went from black to soft yellow. People, when they have these experiences, when they make contact like this, it elevates the mood because there is a knowing, a sudden knowing that physical death is not the end. I've had so many things happen, I can't possibly put them all in this letter. I just wanted to share them with someone who wouldn't think I was crazy. And your book was the answer I was looking for, so thank you so much for writing it. So, gang, if you have lost a loved one, it isn't too late for you to have your own Old Soul Day celebration. Cook up a favorite meal, pull out photographs of your loved one who has moved on, write them a letter, then read it to them, play their favorite music, go find a piece of clothing that they wore and smell it, cry if you need to, or laugh, have a good laugh. Know that beloved children, family, and friends on the other side, they're just a breath away, gang, and that they can hear us. They can hear us. So it's time to go. I've even run over, so I want to thank you so much for joining me tonight. Our next show will be on Thanksgiving Eve, so after you have had your fill of stuffing, gravy, pumpkin pie, cranberries, yum. Tune in as I explore how I'm going to explore. I want to take a look. I really want to take a look at how religion and spirituality and life after death, they go hand in hand. a lot of individuals, what they do is they begin with the New Age movement. They begin with mediums. They begin with New Age books, magazines, workshops. You know what's interesting is that they end up with some, so they find their way back into the mysticism of their original religion. I'm a practicing Jew, and so for a while I played around. I went and I studied Kabbalah a little bit, not Madonna Kabbalah, but like Kabbalah. For years and years I avoided Judaism because I could only see superficially some of the hypocrisy. But once I started getting involved with some of my own experiences, it took me back to the mysticism of my religion. And every branch of religion has mysticism in it. So anyway, what we're going to do is we're going to get together again at 9 p.m. on Thanksgiving Eve, and I'll share with you what your minister, priest, and rabbi are afraid to tell you about. Remember, if you've had another worldly encounter, if you have a question for me, visit my website at www.carlawillsbrandon.com. Or if there is a topic you would like to hear discussed on A Walk to the Other Side, let me know. Good evening and sweet dreams.
You have been listening to BBS Radio, a blogandservice.com production and a service to others endeavor. Thank you very much for tuning in to our radio program, and we wish you much peace and joy on your journey.